To conclude our program today, Denise Morris interviews fellow mole Jan Hocken about her latest film project, Mind Zone, which even before its release is gaining national attention.
Thank you, Tom. Yes, national attention for a film that explores the uses of psychology in the military. And just this morning in the New York Times, a four-page article on Sergeant Robert Bales, accused in last week's massacre of 16 Afghan civilians, is described as a well-regarded young man who seemed to try to do the right thing, popular, helpful, talented, gracious, and also a gung-ho soldier and a patriot. We also have learned that Sergeant Bales was arrested for an assault of a woman in a hotel room in 2002 and attended anger management following the incident. He had a hit-and-run accident, claiming to have fallen asleep at the wheel and was experiencing deepening financial issues at home. And we also know that Staff Sergeant Bales served four tours of duty, was diagnosed with a traumatic brain injury, and was in the care of military psychologists for possible PTSD. Following the massacre of 16 Afghan civilians, many questions still remain to be answered, to include, why was Sergeant Bales returned to duty? And I am joined this morning by fellow mole Jan Hocken, a clinical psychologist and documentary filmmaker. Her film, Mind Zone: Therapist Behind the Front Lines, explores the uses of psychology in the military. And we'll begin, Jan, by talking about your film, and then we'll try to explore some of these issues that have come up recently in regards to the sergeant who has committed this act, and to try to put it in perspective and understand the role of psychology in the military. So, Mind Zone: Therapist Behind the Front Lines.
Well, the military has actually done quite a bit in recent decades to provide mental health services in war zones. And in many ways, that's an untold story that I wanted to explore as a psychologist, how much is being done. And although psychiatrists and psychologists were deployed all the way back to World War I, they played a role in war zones for about a century, particularly in triaging psychiatric casualties, determining which soldiers have to be medevaced out and how to get people back on the line to kind of patch them up in the same way medical doctors would. Over the last few decades, the military has sent whole combat stress control teams of 35, 40 therapists into Iraq and Afghanistan. And there were earlier versions of this and earlier conflicts all the way back to the 80s. But over the last decade, with the soldiers becoming more and more fatigued and these repeated deployments, the military has really kind of upped the availability of mental health services. Now, most people think that's a very positive thing. Therapists in war zone, hooray for the military. But there's a literature that's been questioning this for a long time on how you can both protect soldiers from psychiatric casualties and maintain the fighting forces, which really is about conveying to them that their symptoms are normal and that they will be fine with a few days rest and get them back to duty. So the issue, though, of diagnosing soldiers who are particularly fighters or infantry who have a much higher rate of psychiatric casualties because they really bear the brunt of force of war more than people in support roles. How you manage all of the separate the normal and the not normal is itself a really complicated problem. And I think there's a sort of naivete around this issue that because most soldiers actually in a war zone would be diagnosable for PTSD. Now, the issue is if they still are preoccupied with violence. You know, one of the symptoms is, are you on hyper alert, states of vigilance? Are you preoccupied with violence? Do you have access to weapons? You think about them a lot, think about killing people. You know, all these intrusive thoughts, feeling disconnected from others. There is a socially cultivated PTSD that comes with being a fighter.
This is
very difficult for that clinicians can kind of parse these effects in the war zone.
This is interesting because in the same article this morning, this New York Times article came out just this morning, and we'll see if we can't link it for people without high expectations, but some good stuff within it. Bales lawyer is already sort of coming out to with a punch. And his quote is, if he cracked, they said, it was because he probably had PTSD that the Army failed to diagnose and had been dispatched to a war he did not want to fight and had seen a friend gravely wounded just before the killings. Now, there's that. But more of what I thought was kind of revealing is then they talk with a doctor, Stephen Zanakis, a psychiatrist and retired brigadier general, who said after, this is very revealing, I think, I mean, it's a bit long, but I'd like you to respond to it. After a decade of combat where hundreds of thousands of troops have sustained traumatic brain injury and PTSD, those syndromes by themselves seem inadequate to explain how a seemingly normal and widely admired sergeant might have single-handedly committed one of the worst crimes of the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts. With his multiple deployments and wounds, Dr. Sanakis said, quote, Sergeant Bales seemed emblematic of bigger problems, an overstretched military, battered by 11 years of combat, failures by the military to properly identify and treat its weary, suffering troops, and the thin line dividing normal behavior in a war, what later is deemed snapping. And then he ends with this, and this is where I'd like you to respond, because it seems very revealing to me. The quote, the Army will want to say that soldiers who commit crimes are rogues, that they are individual, isolated cases, but they are not.
Well, this statement in his official position as a psychiatrist and officer in the military, in a leadership role, is remarkable in a certain sense, because it's remarkable in that we've come a long distance from World War I, when thousands of soldiers exhibiting symptoms of PTSD were shot. They were executed by the British because there was so much suspicion that soldiers were mimicking a syndrome that became known as hysteria. War hysteria or war neuroses, that they were consciously exhibiting symptoms of paralysis and so on to avoid going back to duty. And of course, that probably was the case in part, that either consciously or unconsciously, that the horrors of war will lead people to want to withdraw from it. And this itself has been the subject of perpetual surprise, that soldiers might at times mimic symptoms or use whatever resources they have to get out of combat. But I think I'd like to kind of reframe that issue for a moment, because even though the issue of access to services and properly diagnosing soldiers is an important one for veterans and service members, it also frames war pretty much in medical terms. And so now there's quite a bit of discussion, how many have PTSD, how many are being diagnosed by the military. And the effect of this is to separate off the clinical picture from the broader political picture of suffering and the effects of war, and expect clinicians to be able to kind of monitor that boundary if they're skilled enough or if the military is responsible enough. So I can even see this position being kind of leveraged in a kind of conservative way, saying, yes, we're going to rise to the occasion and acknowledge this was a soldier who cracked. You know, we need to do a better job in the area of treatment. But this really doesn't, I think, help us understand the entirety of the picture.
And this is explored within the film as well. We'll let folks know where they can get more information on the film. But I want to take our last bit of time here to have you respond to what you've already mentioned, this issue of perpetual surprise. And Jan, you appeared last week on the Friday edition of Democracy Now!, which we will also link to on our webpage, to discuss the film and the issues at play in understanding the role of psychology in the military. And you were asked about the Joint Base Lewis-McChord, some have called the worst in the country, and this is where you did some of your filming and work with the units that were deployed to do work with soldiers. You responded in part by saying, quote, anytime you have a large base with a lot of infantry, you're going to have problems that soldiers carry back from the field. And you went on suggesting that, quote, I think there is something about this perpetual surprise that we need to tend to. why we're shocked that domestic violence and other expressions of mental pathology or disturbances are associated with these bases, because some of that goes with the territory, end quote. And certainly you're not suggesting that soldiers will be soldiers, but there is something that we must tend to on both sides of this issue. And so if you could just talk about that a little bit, and, you know, what does it mean, and how do we tend to it?
Well, in the Mind Zone documentary, I tried in part to shift the focus of pathology or madness from the individual mind of the soldier. How many of them have PTSD? Is it 17%, 20%, 30%? You know, all these numbers, by the way, historically are an artifact of the way you diagnose. And it's PTSD, even mild traumatic brain injury, is a very, these are spongy categories. They depend on what service members or veterans are willing to acknowledge or do acknowledge about their own experience. So the question of who identifying and diagnosing the mentally impaired soldier is one project. I tried to shift that focus to a kind of collective PTSD, if you might term it that way, or collective madness, where we kind of separate off or defend collectively, these defenses operate to separate off the effects, the disturbing aspects of war, and putting young, typically young people in situations that are going to undermine their humanity and lead them to do very bad things. And then they come home, and I think the newsflash aspect of this is a kind of return of the repressed. And many historians have documented this for as long as we've talked about the psychology of war, that there is a disavowal, a not wanting to know what we're doing with young people who send them away. And I think now therapists have kind of come onto the stage as the anointed healers more than the clergy now, that they're supposed to kind of undo these effects. You know, so there's a discourse of healing, you know, healing the wounds of war through therapy. And as important as therapy is, this is a collective problem. It's more of a political problem than I think as a larger society we have to address and confront than just shunting people off into treatment.
And allowing for perpetual conflict. Yes. And so, Jan, how can folks find out more about the film? That will probably end us there.
Okay. Updates and release dates on the film will be posted on our website, Mind Zone Movie. That's all one word, mindzonemovie.com. And we're just completing the editing and hope to have a release date to announce sometime early in the summer.
Great. Well, I've been talking with Jan Hocken, a clinical psychologist and documentary filmmaker, about her film Mind Zone, Therapist Behind the Front Lines, and also about some of the recent events that have sparked quite a bit of debate and discussion, along with some horror and grief as well, in terms of what we're doing around the world. So thank you, Jan. And this is Denise Morris for The Old Mole.